Women are very important. Women are the center of the life of any people. It is the women who give birth. It is the women who traditionally had the responsibility for the earth, for caring for it. It was the societies of women planters who kept the crops coming. Among the Iroquois people, it is the women who decide who will be the leaders among the men. And if those men do not discharge their duties responsibly, it is the women who take them out of office. Now, there is a myth long standing among non-Indian people that American Indian women were squaws. And that term is an insult today because it implies that American Indian women were like property or like beasts of burden, people without a voice, people without strength. The opposite was true. Native American women were and still are strong. Native American women were and still are people who have power of all kinds, and they are respected and loved for that power all across this continent of North America, this Turtle Island. This is a story that tells of a woman who was not treated well and of what happened as a result of that. It's called The Wife of the Thunderer. This is a story which takes place in what is now the western part of New York State, around that great waterfalls that is called Niagara. The Wife of the Thunderer. Many years ago, a young woman lived with her father's sister in the village of Gaugua, close to the great falls of Niagara. Her other relatives had died of the sickness which came each year to the people of her village. Although she was beautiful and hardworking and kind to everyone, she was not treated well. They dressed her in the oldest clothing. They made her do all the hardest jobs. Despite it, though, her beauty still shone through the dirt and the ragged clothing, and many men thought they would be glad to marry her. But her aunt would give no man permission to even visit their lodge. And as the years passed by, Aweyo, whose name meant water lily, became more and more certain she would never be allowed to marry because of her aunt's jealousy. One day, in the moon when the raspberries ripen, Aweyo was working when her aunt came to her with a smile on her face. "Make ready, girl," the aunt said. "Tomorrow you will carry marriage bread to the man who will be your husband." Aweyo's heart lifted in her chest like a hummingbird taking flight. "Who is the man I'm to marry? Is it Big Tree? Is it Gray Eagle?" "Nay," said the aunt. "I would never allow you to marry any young boaster like those two. I've found a perfect husband for you. Tomorrow you'll become the second wife of Sweaty Hands." Sweaty Hands. Of all the people in the village, there was no one more unpleasant. It was said he beat his first wife so badly she could not walk for a whole day's journey of the sun across the sky. And his face was as ugly as his manners. He was short and fat like a woodchuck in the summer. He never had a good word for anyone. He was even said to be a coward in battle. And it was rumored all the wealth he had been gained only by treachery or by evil medicine. "My aunt," Aweyo said, "you are teasing me. Surely you do not want me to marry that awful man." But the aunt did not smile at that remark. Instead, her face grew as ugly as that of Sweaty Hands. "Girl," said the aunt in a loud, angry voice, "I will not allow you to speak that way of a man who has given me such fine presents for your worthless self. You will carry marriage bread to him tomorrow, or I will whip the skin from your back." To prove her point, the aunt took a willow switch and brought it down across the girl's shoulders until the switch broke. Then, turning, the aunt walked away and left Aweyo weeping. She did not hear the words her niece spoke in a soft, determined voice. "Nay," Aweyo said, "I will never marry such a man. First, I will die." That night, as Grandmother Moon looked down from the sky and all in the village slept, a single small canoe left the shores of Cayuga Creek. The paddle moving with short, sure strokes, its lone passenger steered the boat into the rushing waters of the Niagara River. Downstream, the rumbling noise of the great falls could be heard, and as the current swept her faster and faster downstream, Aweyo threw away her paddle. "Forgive me, my parents," she said, raising her hands. Now I must join you in death. I give myself into the hands of the thunderers whose voices come from the great falls. Folding her hands in her lap, she sat calmly as the bark canoe rushed downstream, as it was lifted, as though it weighed no more than a drifting leaf, and catapulted over the lip of the great falls. She closed her eyes, waiting to be smashed to pieces on the rocks below, but instead of striking foaming water and great stones, she felt herself land on something which gave with her weight and stopped her fall. She opened her eyes. She was under the base of the falls. In front of her, like a great wall of ice, flowed the water, and her face was wet with the mist. She was resting on a big blanket held firmly in the hands of three men. Aweo looked at them and then looked quickly away. Surely this was a dream. They were dressed in warrior costumes. On the head of each man was a tall, large feather. They were more handsome and strong-looking than any man she had seen before, and one was taller than the others. On his back was a pack basket, filled with pieces of flint. "Little sister," said the tallest of the men, "we heard you call our name. Often have we watched you from above as you worked without complaining. We have seen how you always give thanks for the fruits of the earth, and for the good rain which we send. It was not right that one such as you should end her life in this way." Aweo could hardly believe her ears. This man was Hano, the Thunderer. These men were the ones who ranged the sky, sending down the rain to help the earth, the ones whose lightning bolts terrified evildoers. Often had she heard it said the Thunderers lived beneath the great falls, liking its sound. Now she knew it was true. "Nyawe," she said, "I thank you for my life." All three of the men smiled at her.
"Come," said the leader.
His voice was deep. It rumbled like the thunder, yet it was filled with peace.
"You shall stay with us now."
So it was that Water Lily came to live with the Thunderers. As time went on, it became clear there was love between her and the leader of them, and the two were married. Things continued happily for them. And when the space of four seasons had passed, Aweo gave birth to a son of Hano.
"Now, my wife," said Hano, "you must go for a time to live among your own people. Our son must know what it is like to be a human being. When the time is right, you shall return to us again."
"Nyo," Aweo said. It was true. Although she had been treated badly by her aunt, she longed to see her own people again. Their son should know something of the human world.
"Now listen well," said Hano. "These are matters of great importance. As you bring up our son, remember to keep him hid away. Tell no one who his father is. As he grows, caution him never grow angry at anyone. As long as he remembers, he can remain among human beings.
Next, now that you return to your people, I must tell you why so many of them have died of sickness. Under your village, in a great burrow, there lives a monstrous snake. This snake eats the bodies of your people after they die and have been buried. It does not come out of the earth, for Phil, we will kill it with our lightning stones. It goes to the places where your people drink. It poisons the water, so they die in numbers to satisfy its hunger. This it does once a year. Then it sleeps until again it feels hunger. Soon it will waken again. And before it wakes, you must tell your people to move to Buffalo Creek." Bearing her husband's words in mind, Aweo returned to her people. Her face shone like a cloud touched by the sun. Her clothing was so fine and beautiful that people did not recognize her. But Sweaty Hands and the aunt both thought this strange woman with a child, whose face was kept covered in its cradle board, looked something like that girl they had lost. To the clan mothers, Aweo spoke. She gave them her words of warning with such simple eloquence they were convinced of the truth. They spoke to the council of elders, and before three sunrises had come and gone, the whole village moved to Buffalo Creek. The night after the village had moved, the great serpent woke. It crawled through its burrows to poison the springs. Then it waited in a hole beneath the place where the people buried their dead. For the space of an entire moon it waited, but no dead bodies were buried. Its hunger grew greater and greater, and finally it pushed its head out of the earth to see what was wrong. All around was a deserted village.
Now the monstrous serpent grew angry. How could its food dare to move away? It scented the trail they had taken. It came out of the ground, its hunger making it heedless of danger. It crawled into the lake where their canoes had gone and began to go up Buffalo Creek. Looking down from a cloud in the sky, Hano and his warriors saw the time was right. As the serpent came up the narrow creek, its body filling it from one bank to the other, Hano hurled a thunderstone. It struck the serpent in its side, making a terrible wound. The monster squirmed and thrashed about, trying to turn around to seek the safety of deeper water, but the thunderer struck again and again. To this day, the banks of that stream are curved in the place where the great serpent shoved against its sides. At last, the monster was dead. It began to float downstream and entered the river. Down it floated until it reached the great falls and lodged against the stones, its body stretching across the river like a broken circle. For a time, the water was held back. Then a great piece of the falls broke away. The place where that monstrous serpent's body became caught today is called the Horseshoe Falls. As the stones fell, they destroyed the place where the thunderers once lived. And though the sounds of the great falls still echo their voices, no longer would Hano and his helpers dwell beneath the falls. From that day to this, their dwelling place on earth has been far away to the west. Now the people of Gaugua were happy. They gave great honor to Aweo and built for her a lodge at the edge of the village. She asked to be allowed to live there in seclusion, and no one thought of troubling her, except for two people, the aunt and Sweaty Hands. The aunt began to spread stories about this woman with a baby and no husband. Sweaty Hands asked again and again, "Why is it that no one is allowed to see that child's face?" Most of the people would not listen to the gossip. They said, "Our Creator does not like human beings to talk badly about each other." But still the aunt and Sweaty Hands persisted. Seasons came and went. The baby grew to be a small boy, crawling about the floor of the lodge, but still no one was allowed to see his face. Finally, one night, the aunt and Sweaty Hands could stand it no longer. They went together to confront this woman who resembled their Aweo of old. If indeed it was the girl, she would be forced to marry Sweaty Hands, baby or not. The aunt brought a willow switch, and Sweaty Hands carried a stick which was shaped like a snake. Some of the people in the village saw where they were headed and thought to stop them, but one wise old woman shook her head. "Nay," she said, "wait. Those who think evil of others may bring it upon themselves." When the aunt and Sweaty Hands reached the door of Aweo and her son, they paused. A stick was leaned across the doorway, yet they paid no attention and pushed their way in. There, in front of a small fire, sat Aweo. Across from her, his back turned to them, the small boy sat, playing with some chips of stone. "Ha, ha, ha," said the aunt in her loud voice. "Now I know you, my niece. You will come with us and marry this man as I promised." She stepped across the fire and grabbed Aweo by her arm, raising the switch to strike her. Sweaty Hands stepped forward to grab Aweo's other arm, but as he did so, he looked for the first time into the face of Aweo's son. It was the eyes of the boy which caught his attention. At first, they were the clear blue of a calm sky. But as they took in the sight of these two people threatening his mother, they became gray and dark like a thundercloud. With an angry shout, "Ha!" the boy hurled the chips of flint in his small hands at the two intruders. Immediately, two bolts of lightning struck the aunt and Sweaty Hands. And when the smoke cleared, Aweo and her son stood there alone. From the sky came a great cloud. As it touched the earth, Hano and his two helpers stepped down. "Now," said Hano, "it is time for you both to return to us." And so it was. Aweo and the son of Hano, the Thunder Boy, joined him. From that day to this, there were four thunderers, for the boy grew up to join his father. At times, though, Thunder Boy comes back down and walks again on the earth, remembering the short time when he was a human being. And when storms roll across the sky, you sometimes hear the lightning answer from below as Thunder Boy and his father speak to each other. And that is how the story goes. Ho.